June 27, 2020 is the Live from Pedro show. Watt for Pedro Show. Happy Saturday. Last one of June. June is like wailed by. Brother Matt is still, we're quick in quarantine mode, so he's in the love grotto 3 miles south of here. But I'm not totally man alone mode because of those genius software people in Estonia with their Skype software. I got Brother Schizo Fuel from Amarillo aboard.
Howdy.
Welcome aboard. Yeah. Man, we haven't got to talk in a buttload of years.
It's been many years.
Wow. But there was a little stretch there. I think I played 2 Amarillo gigs within a year or two.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
three. If you count the Brian Dennehy thing.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I'd forgotten about that. There was, and I think it was probably like 3 different bands that I played with you. Of course, you probably had 3 different bands too.
Yeah, it might have been. I know it was a special band for Brian Dennehy. It was Bob Lee. It might have been Tom Watson. And it was that place across from the Pemex or some kind of a weapons manufacturer thing. It was called the Peace Farm.
The Peace Farm.
And then another gig was at a Nautica. Indoor swimming pool thing.
Oh, yeah, the net. Yeah.
Right.
That was, I think the band I had taken was Haas Mansouri, which was just improvisational. I had about 15 people up there with noisemakers.
Now, supposedly, I think you told me that venue Little Richard was arrested at for taking his shirt off at a gig.
Yep, and that was verified to me several times since then. He was arrested for taking his shirt off. I'm pretty sure that Elvis got hassled by the cops there, too. Yeah, it was. It's got quite a storied history.
Yeah. Now, the first time I played Amarillo was actually there was a Minuteman gig.
Mm-hmm.
This lady.
Minuteman. Way back then.
Yeah. I mean, there was like either 1984 or 85, and a lady named Pilar was running the place, and there was no PA. D Boone had to sing out of my bass amp.
That sounds like a Whiskey Rilla gig to me, for sure.
I can't remember the name of the venue, but I remember the boss lady, and I remember D Boone singing out the bass amp.
It was probably like the Retina, or I'm trying to remember the name of all those places. There was the Retina. Yeah, there were a bunch of them back then. It was like a storefront, probably.
Yeah, I thought this was like some kind of a bar thing. I can't remember exactly. But anyway, let's go back with you and your journey of music. What's your earliest musical recollection?
Earliest musical recollection. Man, that would probably be driving around in a old Mitsubishi truck with my dad, and I'm embarrassed to say that it was probably John Denver.
Okay.
But that's as far back as I can probably remember, you know, that wasn't Sesame Street, you know, or something. Which was probably more of an influence than John Denver, honestly. But it's funny,
because a couple of years ago I finally got to play in China, and they were telling me that the first, quote, rock, unquote, was John Denver that these guys heard, like, in the late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, wow.
That trip? Yeah. So,
these
kind of things, those skits, I think we don't choose. They just happen.
Yeah. Well, especially over there, you don't. It just sneaks
but
in.
Even with your pop in that truck, I mean, it came on the radio, right? So.
Yeah.
But if you remembered it, it left some kind of brand on your brain.
Oh, yeah, it seared me, you know, and it was downhill from there. I, especially from where I'm from, it was mostly Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings.
Well, he's down the interstate from you guys in Lubbock, right?
Yeah, Waylon Jennings was a Lubbock guy.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just played there this last tour. Ooh, that was a character builder. It was the same, like, pool place I played, not swimming pool, Nautica, Nat thing, but more like pool tables.
Yeah.
In 2002, I think. When I last with you guys in 2004 or something. But, I should tell people we started off the show with John Coltrane and Miles Davis doing Around Midnight, and then Schizo Fuel with Texas Kung Fu Master.
So,
what I'm trying to say, we have cats on the show that they can remember shit when they're 2 and 3. other yeah. ones, they're like late teenagers. The first music thing they remember was like in the marching band and shit. So you know, there's no, it's supposed to be no hard questions, and there's no wrong answers with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay. For sure.
Okay, so in your pad that you grew up in, it was there, right, Amarillo?
Yeah, for the most part. You know, strangely enough, I did live in Lubbock for a short period of time when I was a kid.
Okay, but in the Wayback Machine,
mm-hmm.
inside the pad you grew up, was there musical instruments?
You know, I remember my dad having a banjo in a closet when I was probably, you know, I don't know, eight, nine years old, but it never came out. I technically didn't start playing guitar until I was, well, I started playing guitar when I was about 14, but I didn't own one until I was 20.
What about school? Did you do the marching band shit or choir?
No, okay. No, I was too busy skipping class and chasing skirts back then.
You know, Joe Biza, Sacred Trust guitar man, he didn't start guitar till he was 27.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of weird stories like that. From the metal side of things, I'm pretty sure that Zakk Wylde didn't start playing until he was 23, 22. Wow. It was his mid-20s, which, you know, he's one of the most accomplished, you know, I mean, he's not a very good guy, I wouldn't say, but as far as guitar playing is concerned, in the metal world, he's like one of the best. But
no, I would say that he's the cat who got killed in that plane wreck, right?
Who's Zakk Wylde?
Yeah.
No, he's still around.
Who am I thinking of? Who's the guy who played for Ozzy?
Yeah, that's Zakk Wylde. Is he dead?
There was a plane crash, and somebody was fucking around, and they actually crashed in front of everybody in the tour bus and shit.
Oh, no, that was, I know who you're talking about. That was the original. Yeah, that was Randy Rhoads, yeah.
Okay, okay.
That guy was probably born with a guitar in his hand.
Because I was going to say that guy could play. But I think Zakk Rhoads, I've heard some stuff with him. He can play.
Oh, yeah.
But here's another example. Vincent, you know, the painter, only last 10 years of his life. He never painted as a kid.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
That dude ended up doing like 5,000 self-portraits.
Yeah, in the same vein, I remember learning as a young kid in school, you know, Grandma Moses.
Oh, right.
You know, she didn't start, I don't think she was, I think she was in her late 70s when she started.
So, you know, a great man once said, no wine before it's time.
Yeah, no joke. Well, let's hope. Let's hope that works for everybody.
So, you were playing guitar, but not on your own. How did that happen?
I was just hanging out. You know, I had friends who had guitars. I had a good, real good friend of mine when I was in junior high, middle school, whatever it was back then. His dad had been in bands in the 60s, and he had given his son, this is my buddy Chris, all his stuff, you know, and he had a bass rig, and it to this day, it's the largest cabineted speaker I have ever seen. And we would literally break his mother's dishes by plugging everything in. But it got its hooks in me at that point, because I was like, this is power, you know?
So you actually got on the bass?
No, it was a bass rig, but we played guitars through it. We played six strings through it.
You know one of the most famous guitar solos through a bass rig?
What?
Steely Dan.
Oh, really?
Steely Dan reeling in the years.
Oh, wow. Okay, that makes
Elliot
sense.
Randall. There was no fucking guitar amp in the studio. So he had to use an SVT turned up, you know, the 300 watts, 810, all the way. And Jimmy Page said it was his favorite guitar solo. It was two takes because the engineer forgot to hit record on the first one.
Oh, man.
And he said all that Donald Fagen directed him was Feel the Blues.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can hear him kind of going with the piano riff, you know, and then he goes off. But that's through a fucking bass amp.
Crazy. Anyway, one of the bands that was a big influence when I really started, you know, playing in bands was Caius, Josh Homme, sure. Queens of the Stone Age. those
Reeder,
guys.
Great baseman.
Yeah, yeah. That I'm pretty sure that when Caius first started, that's all they ever used were base rigs for everything. Because there was you had to really hunt out the treble in those recordings.
Greg King got into 15s. I think he read somewhere Tony Iommi used 15s.
Yeah, yeah.
So actually, there was a jazz thing too. Old Fender Pros had 15s. What was the first record you bought yourself, Moseskins?
First record I ever bought, man. I hadn't thought about this stuff in ages. It would have to have been, I think it was a Cars album.
All right, some wave.
I think it was a Cars album. I think it was I don't remember which one. If I searched in my memory bank long enough, I could find the album cover, but I don't think I could find the title. But yeah, it was probably a Cars album.
And
I was really into those guys.
And that, yeah, it was the bass man, right? He sang most of those. First gig you went and saw?
First gig I ever went to see. First gig was, that was probably ZZ Top.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah, that was a ZZ Top. And then I know that I went straight from ZZ Top to, who did I go see that changed everything after that? Because, you know, you go to an arena show, quote unquote, with a very popular mainstream band like ZZ Top, and somebody else asks you to go to a gig, and you go, and who did we see? Seven Seconds.
Oh, 7 Seconds, Kevin Sacco band.
Yeah.
Actually, they weren't. They were Skeeno, and then he moved to Sacktown, but they were a Reno band. Yeah, because I played in a basement. Kind of a skate scene those guys came out of. But Guts and Skins and was the name of the record or something. His brother was on bass, Steve.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think Kevin's still around doing like acoustic at Sacktown. Yeah. First gig that I went to was with D Boone was T Rex.
Oh wow!
Everybody says that.
Wow!
Everybody I tell that to says that. I know it was just pure luck. You know, it was $2.50 at the Long Beach Auditorium. Next one was a Blue Oyster Cult, same place, same amount.
Oh, nice. So, man, you know, back to back.
But we saw ZZ blow away Aerosmith. And, you know, for Arena Rock, they were kind of stripped down. This is before the pink cowboy hats and shit. And the snake and the cow.
Yeah.
They just got out there, and Frank had the little drum set. I finally got to meet them at Stooges gigs, all three, really. The two of them, Frank and Dusty, were Dallas, and Billy's Houston. And good guys.
Yeah, I met Billy one time. I don't remember what the function was, but yeah, he just was really really down to earth, really open.
They can still play too. They had some other stuff going. They're a trio. They don't have side mice, but some of the machines, some of the legs and shit. Yeah, kind of sequencer. But man, good cats, and especially the Tres Hombres and Fandango had big effect on us. Like one side of Fandango was live.
Yeah. When I was in Fandango, that whole first side of that record was pretty amazing.
Right, it has a big medley, right? Get high, everybody, get high.
Yeah. So good. Yeah, I believe, when I was in middle school, there was a group of us, and each of us we didn't plan it out. It almost sounds like we did, but each of us had that was cassette tapes back then.
Sure.
And each of us had our own thing, and it wasn't necessarily our favorite band, but it just sort of worked out, and then as time went on, we kept going with it. I had every single ZZ Top recording, release recording, and then another friend had AC/DC recordings, and then the other guy had, who was the other one that we had? Zeppelin, which, that was a lot fewer tapes. but yeah, with our whole group, just sort of we went over to this guy's house. That's what we listened to over there, and then we go to this guy's house. We listen over there. But yeah, I had all the ZZ Top albums. I love those guys. Even the corny, campy.
When they came back, when they came back with the sunglasses and
TV dinners and all those kinds of stuff.
Oh right, because they're early with the video shit.
Oh yeah.
And the way car, the car and the ladies and much different.
Yeah.
Much different.
Yeah.
In fact, the Tush, I think that's Dusty singing.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep.
You had a band early on called Thick. I want to play SNM.
Very good.
Thank you.
Your pet's rapid babe. Should I never be alone? Not threat in my hand till next new moon when we find the way of rest and cold carpet.
Why for Pedro show. Yeah, we started that chunk of music off with Thick doing SNM. Is SNM an acronym?
Yeah, that is a strange little tune and story behind the name of the song. Along with Thick, you know, we recorded that album at a place called Amp Studios. Shout out to Drew Holder in Amarillo at Amp Studios. And he was in a bunch of punk bands back when he was 10 years older than me. But when it came time, you know, during the late 90s and whatnot, he was actually our first drummer, Thick's first drummer. But he had just started his own recording studio. And several years after he'd gotten this thing going, we accidentally started an improv group called Sunday Night Midnight, SNM.
Right.
And, Sunday night, and every line in that song, that Thick song, is actually the title of a Sunday Night Midnight song.
Okay.
So it's a strange little jigsaw puzzle of stuff.
Sure.
There. Yeah. But yeah, we used to call that asshole jazz Sunday Night Midnight because if you promoted it as jazz, the people who showed up just thought you were assholes.
Then we heard Kay Salita, that's Kay from Black Flag with Bass Wars, Pat Ruthersmeer from the Germs with on a little known solo record. It's really bitching, though. He did in the late 80s, called Princess, Thorn Friends, out of Austin with Swimming with Stein, The Magnet Hearts, Complicated Cats, it's Jonathan Hall's new trip, Dietrich and Barnes, John Dietrich from Deerhoof, Tim Barnes, great cat, Parasol Gigante, and Deerhoof's got a new album, which, John Dietrich, Oh Ye Saddle Babes, and finally, Special Privileges from Thick. So, yeah. How did Thick get together?
Well, I was telling you about Drew Holder. He had started his studio, and I was itching to start a band, and nobody... I knew all the musicians in town, but everybody, you know, Amarillo is kind of it was a much smaller scene back then. And if you were in one band, you were in two bands. And if you were in two bands, there's a pretty good chance you were in three bands. And at the time that I tried to jump in, it just wasn't anybody available that was worth playing with, you know.
Uh-huh.
But Drew had started his studio, and he had kind of dropped out of all the bands he was working with. And just for the heck of it, he just said, yeah, sure, let's do a band. And I gathered up some other guys from some other groups that had been kicking around. And we had a singer at that time, so there were four of us. And it just started, we started out, luckily enough, that our practice spot was a recording studio. And we started out, it was you know how things grow. It becomes something completely different than what you planned. Eventually Thick, what's that?
I think that's called the law of unintentional consequences.
Yeah, no joke. You're not joking. We eventually became the band that nobody in town would go see except the other musicians, which made the crowds really small, but they were pretty into it.
Yeah, like Minuteman.
There you go.
You know, in the old days, I think there was a lot. There were people who were into the movement, and then all the rest. I mean, it was a small scene. Even in Hollywood, I mean, it was the same 100 faces every weekend, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah. So I think a lot of things kind of start small. But Thick went on, and you guys probably did the outfit since Drummer Man was the recording man. That's where these recordings, and you guys ended up doing an album, right? What was the first gig like? I should ask you about that.
The first gig we ever played. Well, we kind of, there were two other bands in town. There was actually Drew Holder, that drummer recording guy I was telling you about. He had been in a band with his brother, and they were, and the other guys in that band were brothers as well, and they were called Brothers Grimm. And they did some touring. They recorded an album in L.A. I don't remember the name of the...
We continue next hour, because we're at the end of the first hour. June 27, 2020, Dishwap Peter Stow. Special guest gets a fuel. Hold tight for hour two. June 27, 2020. It's the second hour of the Walk for Pedro show.
The studio, or the label, they got on a label. I don't remember what it was. But anyway, Luke Holder was Drew's brother, and he had a gig at a place called The Golden Light in Amarillo, which at that time was mainly a Texas country type, you know, venue. But, you know, I mean, you could sneak in some rock and roll every once in a while. And there was another band on this bill, this particular show, called The Humans. And they were actually doing some national tours at that time. So this seemed like it was going to be a pretty good gig. And we snuck on there. We talked them into letting us go. Well, here we were. It's our first gig. We are completely different from anybody else on the ticket. We put out a flyer. And this flyer was all tongue-in-cheek, you know. It was all just kind of goofy, you know, it's that old punk rock stuff, you know.
Sure.
Where you're kind of down, you're making jokes at your own expense, you know, sort of thing. I'm trying to remember all the lines. We made up a bunch of fake media quotes and put it on a flyer and plastered the town with them. Well, the owner of the Golden Light saw one of these things, and he hated it, and he wanted us to go through town and get rid of all these flyers, and we were like, well, no, there's no way we're going to do that, and he kept making a big deal about it, and he wanted us off of the bill. Well, then the other bands on that ticket kept, they start, the other two just slowly dropped off of the thing, and I don't know how to explain this to you. There was another group, I think Luke was out of the show and then he was back in the show, because if he wasn't in the show, then there obviously wasn't going to be a gig. So he just went ahead, for our sake, he went ahead and stayed on, played the gig. Well, because the owner had made such a big deal about this flyer, you know, we were quoting like Billy Graham saying, you know, I'd rather soul kiss Satan than go to a thick show, you know, that sort of thing. So we decided to make a really big deal out of this first gig of ours that had already created a little bit of publicity, because the owner of the Golden Light, hated us already without even hearing us. So we dressed up in all these wacky costumes. It was just absolutely ridiculous. Things that just didn't happen at the Golden Light. And I could tell you 50 different stories about that one night, but my favorite one is the bass player Mick. He had a sundress on, and he had shaved his entire head. I mean, eyebrows and everything.
Yeah.
He had shaved his whole head, had a sundress on, and underneath on his, you know, his junk, he had this Argyle sock hanging down from his stuff. And throughout the entire show, he would lift this dress up while we're just rocking out and show everybody this Argyle sock, and people were going nuts. Well, eventually, I'm sitting over here playing, and I look down on the stage, and that Argyle sock is sitting on the stage. So at some point, it became a very pornographic show. But yeah, they tried to shut us down. The owner went through the crowd and was asking people, are you here to drink or are you here to watch this junk? And of course, you know, everybody's going to say the same thing. He's like, both? I don't know. You know, so he couldn't quite shut the show down. But that was our very first gig. For
okay,
sure.
Now that dude ain't running the club anymore, is he?
No, he's not. He's sold out. I mean, and I'll tell you what.
Yeah, because this is where I was going to play with Mike Baghetta a few months ago, right?
Yeah, the Golden Light. Now, you know, I got to hand it to this guy who picked. See, the Golden Light is the longest, and it's still, the longest continuously open and running. And I don't know how the whole COVID thing has affected that this record. I don't know. Restaurant, it may even be establishment on Route 66. And he, at one time it was just kind of a shotgun, you know, greasy spoon restaurant on a storefront. Well, he bought the place next to him and opened it up as a venue. You know, and that was back late 90s. And he turned it into a very prestigious, as far as the, you know, Texas country, you know, that whole sort of new wave of outlaw country stuff, very prestigious venue. I mean, everybody who's anybody that you can think of in that genre has had played the Golden Light. And then, he did it, but he just sort of lost interest, and then Angela Corpening, who she was my roommate. You slept on her couch. The Second Men, I think is when you guys came through.
I think I had a little bourbon helping me.
Yeah. She eventually bought the place, and, she still got it. They're still going. But yeah, he got out a long time ago. Back it's been almost 15, 16 years.
Well, Carmel Wales.
Jump the curb, just like that. something. Oh, you could be walking down the street just watching the birds and the trees. And you could get robbed. Just like that, you could get robbed. Oh, that'd be terrible. You'd lose everything. Lose your watch, your wallet, all those pictures of your girlfriend. I was walking. I was thinking about something. I was walking. I was thinking about something. Oh, you could be walking down the street just minding your own business, like I said. A complete stranger would be walking by the other way. Go, fall dead in your arms. It would be terrible, terrible. You'd be an innocent bystander. But who believed that? Well, think about something. I was walking. I was thinking about something. I was thinking about random misfortune. Uh-huh. I was thinking about the random misfortune. Uh-huh. Think about random misfortune.
My head. If he didn't want me watching women, he'd have left my eyeballs dead. Now, isn't that so? Isn't that so? You gotta go where your heart says go. Isn't that so? Didn't he know what he was doing when he divided high and low? You got to bury the seed in the earth, my friend, if you expect that thing to grow. Isn't that so? Isn't that so? You gotta go where your heart says go. Isn't that so? The line of least resistance, lead me on. The line of least resistance, lead me on. Didn't he know what he was doing when he made the magic vine? His own son got a reputation for turning water into wine. Now, isn't that so? Isn't that so? You got to go where your heart says go. Isn't that so? Line of least resistance, lead me on. line of least resistance will lead me on. Line of least resistance will lead me on, lead me on. Line of least resistance will lead me on. Oh yeah, line of least resistance will lead me on. Line of least resistance will lead me on. Line of least resistance will lead me on. Line of least resistance will lead me on.
Sox baseball.
Show start off the second hour with Dad Byrne, Schizofuel. Notice it ain't thick. We'll get to that. Grandpa Jimmy, long walk off a short pier, Cleveland. Actually, they were living in the city at the time. Yeah. Tom Herman, I'm doing a project with him right now. He told me those were the days when he rode his motorcycle. Peter Lochner, after that, old days of Cleveland. Isn't that so? Vem with Malfeasis.
Them.
And Schizofuel, Mailbox Baseball. So what ended up happening with Thick? It ran its course, right?
Yeah, you know, it ran its course. I got really, really sick of lugging the cabinets around, and I loved playing on the road, I do, but it was just getting too much. The lifestyle was starting to really wear on me there at the end of it.
Okay, what about the Schizofuel record? It's beautiful. How'd that happen?
I recorded it the first album called Ghost of the Golden Light.
Uh-huh.
The first album, it took me 4 years to record that, and Thick was still heavy, you know. It was still my main project at the time, and I just intermittently recorded an album. And by the time it was done, Thick was done, and my day job was done. I had to work for a company that sold solar panels and all kinds of stuff by retail, and it just went under. And I was basically out of money and homeless, and I just grabbed this album and took off on the road. And that the rest is history. I spent the next four and a half years sleeping in the back of a Ford Ranger playing music.
A 4 year tour.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah,
but I wasn't lugging 900-pound.
No. Yeah, I understood about that. They make littler bass stuff now.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have mattered to my bass player. It wouldn't have mattered. No, he'd have put lead weights in them just to make them heavy.
I want to play Haltom's Diamonds, Third and Main.
There you go.
Okay.
The whole world over.
felt so helpless. At the time, I felt so goddamn helpless. Till I found enough of me to put myself first. So when your last fair deal goes south,
una macchina nuova con cui andare al lavoro. Sette giorni di ferie ad agosto e sette giorni di ferie a Natale scandiscono inesorabili il ritmo della sua vita magra. Ma non ci sono problemi. Ampio parcheggio all'ombra. Tubo in posizione, finestrini sigillati e via col gas. Con sobria autorevolezza per sottolineare che è possibile vivere il ruolo di manager pur rimanendo donna. È incantata col mondo e con chi le sta intorno, soprattutto se con un reddito e un'educazione inferiore ai suoi. Ma non ci sono problemi. Una bella giornata di sole, in piedi sul davanzale dell'ufficio e un passo giù nel vuoto.
Thank you. Thank you.
what do they call it? Oh man, I'm total brain fart. It
abandoned a box.
Yeah, I just bought one of those. It's the huge company that digital something six.
Line six.
Line six. Yeah, sorry, I love that. An HD 400 Line six pedal, and just plugged into the PAs. I mean, I could go to a gig with all of my equipment in both hands, you know?
That's how you do a four-year tour. Let's tell the people what the How comes diamonds? It must have been the name of a pad, a jewelry store?
When I was on the road, when I released that first album, my plan was to do a kind of old school, real old school trick where I was the singer front man guy, and I would be the one who traveled, but I'd have a band in basically these little regions that I would just go grab them and we'd do those little gigs and I'd move down the road. Right, and when I was in Fort Worth, I had a band called, The Beautiful Trainwreck with a bunch of really good guys. But on the side, at night, if I could get away with it in certain towns, I would go out and I'd busk. And honestly, I would make more money busking. And it was more musically rewarding than anything I ever did on stage. I mean, that's the truth. Okay. It's not there now. They've completely redone downtown Fort Worth now. But, the jewelry store is there now still. But Haltham's Diamonds was a jewelry store in downtown. It is a jewelry store in downtown Fort Worth, and there were actual streets then. There's not now. But I would go to that corner. It happened to be my corner. Every once in a while, I'll have to run some whack job evangelical off the corner. But I'd make 80 to 90 bucks a night.
Damn.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was. That the song itself is, the same old story, I think it's about my ex-wife. but
I thought it was going to be like that Creedence song, Lodi.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because that's kind of the band song, right? But the ex-wife song, yeah, there's a lot of those too.
Yeah.
We heard Round Eye, Uomo Mondero. That's, the modern man in Italian, because the bass man sings that. These guys, they're low white guys, but they've lived in Shanghai for a bunch of years, and they came to Pedro and produced their album. Chansons after that with Fuzz Batou. That's Howie Reeve in France, because he can't get to England right now. Water Damage, Dan Kukas, Jeb Bishop, Damon Smith, Matt Crane. These are friends of Joe Biza. In fact, Joe Biza did the artwork for their new record.
Crazy.
Yeah, yeah. What was that? Asshole jazz kind of thing. And then the Schizo Fuel with Go With God, Topless Shoe Shine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a Joe Henry cover.
Yeah, yeah.
Weird story behind that, for sure. I got to tell you this story.
Bring it.
I was trying to get the mechanical rights to this song. It's a Joe Henry song, and I loved it, and I was able to kind of turn it into more of a country rock song. And I was trying to get the mechanical rights, and I couldn't find who owned the song, where I went to apply for it. And I found this web page back then that said Maverick Records, or not Maverick. It wasn't Maverick Records or something. No, maybe it was Maverick Records.
That's
well, I
Madonna.
Called them up and
they,
what's
Madonna's
that?
Madonna's label.
Yeah.
Freddie DeMann ran it. Her manager ran it. Remember that candle box that kind of alternative thing was on there.
Yeah, well, that's all kind of part of this story, is I called them up, and I asked them, how do I get these rights, and they gave me a phone number, and I call the phone number, and this lady answers, and it's not like, hey, this is such and such office, how do you do? It was just a hello, and I said, I'm trying to get the rights to Topless Shoeshine by Joe Henry, and she calls out, like covers the phone, and calls out through, hey, it's for you. And this guy picks up the phone and goes, this is Joe. I had called the dude's house. And I was like, oh, crazy. So he goes, yeah, man, here's the person you send stuff to, and ask me, how am I recording it, blah, blah, blah. It's a little bit of conversation, and he let me go. And we hung up, and then it dawned on me, the later on, you know, about 10 minutes later, it wasn't that I had just talked to Joe Henry, one of my favorite songwriters. It wasn't that I had just talked to Joe Henry. I had just talked to his wife. He is married to Madonna's sister. I was freaking out more that I had just talked to Madonna's sister than I had to Joe Henry.
Oh, man, that's great. Beautiful. Yeah. Look, we're at the end of the second hour. June 27, 2020, Dishwap Peterson, special guest, gets a fuel hat. Hold tight for hour three. June 27, 2020. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro show.
Are we going?
One, two, three.
Hello?
One, two, three, four.
And days, creativity in certain ways, for a genius, an artist of self, not quite fit for a shelf, find escape through your wrath, not unlike Sylvia Plath. Exploring generations of creativity, artists making statements with activity. dealing with crisis and intervention, putting it into your art is your intention. Beauty and passion come together. Mental clouds, storm clouds of angry weather, strive and put it down like mad, going way out and the best you've had. Your art, your terror, you're alone in life. Fully wrought out is your strife. Take your stand and dig in. Stand on your bravery from within. Touch into a universal nerve. Lead the way and come to serve. You live and lead on to resolve your problems we try to solve. Always explore all creativity. Survive with all civility.
For Pedro Show, start third hour off with Whiskerilla for Schizofuel, Crane with Dreaming of Utopia after that, Up My Idaho, You to Pimp, Zola Jesus, Siphon, Joe Brewer out of Madison, That's Jack Brewer from Sacred Trust Singer's cousin. Creativity and Madness. He wrote a tune on Double Nickels on a Dime, the word. You know, we had to write so many tunes to catch up with the Hooskers that we had to borrow people's words. And I think it was called, yeah, don't please don't be gentle with me or something like that. So thank you, Joe Brewer. And then finally, Schizo Fuel with Nazi Taco.
Yeah, that's a pretty dangerous song these days.
Yeah, it's kind of realistic these days. So, okay, after 4 years of touring, what happened? I can kind of guess. But.
Oh, yeah. I came back to Amarillo just to chill for, I was going to chill here for about 4 or 5 months, and I just wound up staying, you know. I wound up playing music with a bunch of people, and at almost the same time that I had planned on leaving, I wound up getting back into one of the things I used to do when I was a kid, was write stories, write books, and
yeah.
I kind of haven't stopped.
Yeah. In fact, it's beautiful. I love your writing, man.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, you got your own website which like kind of dedicated to your writing.
It's just a website for my writing. Yeah, I mean I push a few of the books.
Yeah, but
here.
At least it's yours. It ain't just something on Fake Look or Shitter or Instant Hand, you know.
Yeah, man, if I could get off of those things, I would.
Well, you could like the nature of it, you know? Up your flyers on those telephone posts, but at least you have your home base. And so
yeah.
Can you give people the URL for that?
It's just ofuel.com, just the same way you'd think it is, just O-F-U-E-L dot, or not dot com, it's not dot U-S, yeah. ofuel.us.
Yes, I was going to say, because we don't want to leave these people astray. But but what about music? Have you thought about going back to it?
I think about it a lot. When it's good for me, it's good for me. And then other times it's the last thing I want to think about. I one of my jokes is that music is stupid, and it kind of is that it's just vibrations, you know, it's just tones. But then I'll hear a song by somebody else that's new.
Yeah.
Or I'll hear a song that I haven't listened to in, you know, many, many years, and then you go, oh, yeah, that's what music does.
Yeah. Well, you got this tune I'm going to play called Light the Fuse, and that's the feeling I get, you know, get lit.
Yeah.
Thank you.
tonight, and my strength is just one strong. I feel the ice and wind, and maybe I'm the one who's done. These are the hands I've been wrong from, but I know that I'm right, and my news are a tie. Man, I've been a farmer, been a church,
something weird with that pool stick. Excuse me, what's your name? Shannon. And where are you from again? Alabama?
Show. Last music for this edition, we had Schizofuel doing Light the Fuse, and then Few doing Cheers out of Tokyo, and finally Hannah, Schizofuel. So, look, music, writing songs, performing songs for your tours, albums, that's a form of expression. You writing literature, you know, you got a book out. We didn't talk about the book, right?
Yeah, I've got a book out right now called River of Blood, and it's a deeply I hate saying this stuff, it embarrasses me, but it's a deeply literary crime novel. But yeah, it's out right now. You can get it at Amazon. River of Blood, Schizofuel, or just O'Fuel, I guess I'm using.
When you say a heavy crime, like James Ellroy?
Actually, one of the editorial reviews I just got compared me to James Ellroy. Yeah,
I read four of his books. He has something called the L.A. Quartet. So, Black Dahlia, Big Nowhere, Hollywood Confidential, White Jazz.
Yeah, Black Dahlia was amazing.
That kind of got it started off, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And he had some other Requiem for Brown and stuff like that. But those are the four, and I really liked it. And then. Yeah, it kind of dropped off, but man, his writing, it seemed, as he went through, got more and more clipped, more and more econo with the verbiage. It was very interesting to see him develop. And also, you know, I've lived in California now 54 years, so, it's not Virginia, but... but it was interesting to read about. And so, do you figure Amarillo into your writing?
Yeah, you know, most of my, in a way, the culture certainly is there. The strange Bible Belt, hypocrisy is all in there. Certainly. It's, you know, you've been here, you know, there is no landscape. It's so flat out here, you can see the back of your head out there on the horizon. So, most of the landscape here is in the people, you know, and in the politics, and it's a strange place where people keep a lot of themselves hidden, and you know, behind ideologies and whatnot. It's just a really weird place. But I don't think I've ever really mentioned Amarillo by name. In most of my writing, it's unnamed places anyway. I just find that you know, as much mystery as you can leave in a story, the better. And most of the time, when, like, if you live in LA or you live in New York or Seattle, you know, those places there's a reason to write stories about those places, because they are a character in themselves, you know. As far as where I'm at, I just feel like you can write the types of stories that I write can happen anywhere, because this is anywhere and nowhere all at the same time.
You know, there's a west part of your town called Wild Dorado, and just west of that is something called the Cadillac Ranch.
It's actually in between Amarillo. Wild Dorado would be west of Cadillac Ranch.
I pronounced it wrong. The Cadillac Ranch is in between Wild Dorado and Amarillo.
Yeah. It's easy to mispronounce stuff from here because, I mean, there's a place called Miami about 80 miles north of here that's pronounced Miami. So, yeah.
The point was being, besides my fuck up with geography, is how did such an artistic, I got a piece of paint from one of those cars that I have on the dash of the boat held on with Velcro.
Yeah.
How did something that artistic get going there?
Well, that was all part of the Dynamite Museum. Which was started by a guy named Stanley Marsh III.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Stanley was a perfect example of how this place can produce insanity, like just pure insanity out of almost just a speck of nothing out here. And a lot of my friends, a lot of the punk scene in Amarillo he wasn't a big fan of music, and he wasn't a big fan of quote unquote the punk scene or any scene really. But because of the nature of what he did, which was he created surprise art. Cadillac Ranch is a straight back then. I mean, now it's an American, icon. Anybody coming down I-40 is going to stop at Cadillac Ranch. But back in the day, the 70s and the 80s, it was just a bizarro thing to see on the side of the road. And if you drive, and still to this day, if you drive through Amarillo, there are what in the shape of a caution sign, like a wet road sign, that diamond shaped sign.
Yep.
All through Amarillo, there are just strange signs in people's yards and parking lots.
Yeah,
started that. That's Dynamite Museum. It all started from there. My buddy Cadillac Fraff was in his crew for a little bit. There were a lot of the guys that I played music with were part of his crew that did art that way.
I just want to bring that up because Sly Stone said something. It's not where you're from; it's where you're at.
Yeah.
And so,
for sure.
and so, you don't have to have the name of a big town or the name of a little town, or you even say the name of the town wrong. It's just expression, right? I mean,
yeah.
Would that be your advice, a guy traveling between the music and literature world?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, if I wasn't able to express myself in some sort of artistic way, it would drive me crazy. I don't know how long I could sustain, And I know people who get up every morning and go do the 9 to 5 and they go home and they watch their 4 hours of TV and life is beautiful. They cook out their hot dogs and I love those people and I can see the allure behind, relaxing, into that. But I cannot stand it for very long. I have to do something. I'm sure you're the same way.
We're cursed.
Rolling around in your
Brother
head.
Skits, we're cursed.
Yeah, it is a curse. It feels like a curse for sure.
Look, it's been a huge honor to have you aboard. Look, even if you don't come out with a record soon and you write another book, will you come back on the show and we can talk about it?
That sounds great, Mike. I really appreciate it. I was really humbled for you to ask me to come on here. I appreciate it.
The whole idea of this show is about people like you, man. You make it really important to me. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Okay, brother. People, it's been June 27th, edition of Wofford Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.